Welcome to It's All Politics from... Whoa! Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR... Whoa! Ken, did you just throw a shoe at me?
I actually threw two shoes in the Bronx as a sign of disrespect.
Why did you throw a shoe at me?
Because I looked into your shoes and I saw your soul. Wait, before we go any further,
I'm Ron Elver.
And I'm Ken Reardon.
And you threw two shoes at me.
Well, I got into the spirit of the news of the week.
Yes, another controversy that's emerged this week that is affecting the new president, the president-elect Barack Obama, is swirling around on one level his choice of one person to give the invocation at the inauguration. That's Rick Warren, the pastor of Saddleback Church out in California. And on the other hand, about the character of his cabinet in general. Is he being true to his promise of change? I put it to you, Ken Reed.
Well, but his promise has also been inclusion. And I think certainly if inclusion is part of his promise, and it has been, then having Rick Warren give the invocation is...
But what's making the Rick Warren controversy hot? I mean, I can imagine 3-4 months ago him saying, look, let's have Rick Warren give the invocation. It'll be a reach out to evangelicals. It will be a showing of respect to people who did not vote for me and think that on social issues I'm anathema to them. It's a nice gesture, and it might have been fine a few months ago, but because Proposition 8 lost in California and because another anti-gay proposition was passed in Florida, the gay community, which has been hugely supportive of Barack Obama, at least in general, is up in arms over those occasions, over those votes on November 4th, and for them to get a stick in the eye with Rick Warren, who is, of course, very anti-gay.
We have to say that. He's anti-same-sex marriage. He's against stem cell research, against abortion, but especially on the gay and lesbian issues.
He's been quite front and center on Proposition 8.
I think the selection of Rick Warren was just a signal that, as he said, yes, he was for change and all that, but yes, he was also for inclusion. And, of course, remember giving the closing prayer at the inauguration would be the Reverend Joseph Lowery, civil rights leader. I think he just tried to get everything in there. But clearly, a lot of people coming away from this not exactly enthralled. And then when you add to the fact that a lot of people are not happy with, they think that perhaps Ken Salazar is maybe too moderate on the environment, and then going back to Hillary Clinton, who voted for the war. I mean,
too moderate to be Secretary of State,
and Joe Biden, who voted for the war.
Well, too moderate to be Vice President. Right. Look, there are an awful lot of people in this cabinet and in the top group of his appointees who have remarkably moderate credentials. I mean, you throw in General James Jones, who's going to be the National Security Advisor. I mean, these are not change agents in the ideas of those people who had been at least the earliest and most enthusiastic supporters of Barack Obama. So is he betraying the energy that carried him forward, at least in the early part of the primary season?
Well, there's also Mary Shapiro, who's been named to head the SEC, replacing Chris Cox. And, of course, she had been on the SEC in the 1990s. As a matter of fact, in 1991, she appointed one of the sons of Bernard Madoff to a position, which is kind of...
There's a connection you want to have this week.
But I think, though, given what's facing the next president, given the fact that the lack of consumer confidence, investor confidence in the economy, in the financial institutions, this is not about ideology, it's about competence.
I remember Michael Dukakis in 1988 trying to make that argument. People flayed him for it. People said, oh, you can never win an election on competence.
Well,
you've got to get down into those issues that really cared about. I mean, people care about ideology. They care about issues. They care about feeling as though they have been dissed or that they have been disadvantaged. They don't care about competence.
But there's been a sense of incompetence the last years, especially on what's going on with the economy, especially on the financial institutions. And I think the decisions, the appointments that Obama's been making regarding those fields talks more about competence and making things work, because he said we were asleep at the switch or asleep at the wheel. I'm not sure what it was.
Asleep somewhere.
Yeah, you're right. During the podcast, that would be the listener. And I think we just start fresh on the 20th. But I don't remember ever... I mean, I'm not too familiar with 1933, but I don't remember this a transition period taking this long. It just seems like so much needs to be done so fast, and yet the time
there's so much time left, more than a month.
Between November 4th and January 20th seems like an eternity.
It does indeed. And imagine if we still had the old March schedule where that people had to wait a full 4 months after the election of Franklin Roosevelt.
What was the first year that changed?
It was after Franklin Roosevelt took office in 1933 that it changed.
It was 37 the first time, right?
And so it seems even now, even with the period of time that we have, that it's both too long and too short. It's too short a time to put together a whole government, but Barack Obama seems to be sprinting hinting towards having done so. It appears that he will have named every member of his cabinet before he goes to Hawaii for vacation on the 20th of December.
Right. The two that, as of this podcast, we have not heard from is transportation, which apparently will be Ray LaHood, the one Republican, if you don't include Robert Gates, Ray LaHood, the retiring Republican from 18th District in Illinois.
Peoria, and of course another Illinoisan, another person that Barack Obama has been not close to, but at least acquainted with because of the Illinois connection, and a guy who is a lot of Democrats' favorite Republican. Let's face it, I mean, he's a Republican, but he's a conservative Republican, but he's also the kind of guy who speaks to an era when Democrats and Republicans could golf together and have dinner together.
Drink together.
Right. Back when Republicans drank.
Right.
So Ray LaHood is the kind of guy you could have in a Democratic cabinet, and he could be comfortable. And
he was, of course, one of three Republicans elected in 1994 who refused to sign the contract with America because he thought it was just too binding and too restrictive. Matter of fact, in 2005, he publicly talked about running for governor against Blagojevich, and that would have been very interesting.
But he could never raise the money. He always talked about running statewide, and he wanted to, and the party wanted him to, but he didn't have the deep pockets that some other Republicans always had in Illinois.
And one thing interesting in Barack Obama's press conference on Thursday, he was not asked about Rod Blagojevich and Rahm Emanuel.
It's easy for you to say.
For the first time.
You know, it's an interesting thing, the way they have handled this, and there's been a certain amount of cooperation between Barack Obama and Patrick Fitzgerald, the U.S. attorney there in Chicago, that they have been reinforcing each other's unwillingness to talk about this in public, and that's given Obama some cover so that he can stop answering uncomfortable questions about his own relationship with Blagojevich or Rahm Emanuel's relationship with Blagojevich.
But one, the questions continue, too. I don't think there's anything unseemly about Rahm Emanuel asking Blagojevich about the Senate appointment. Why not? It makes complete sense.
I'll tell you why. Because here's a guy who's known as an operator talking to another guy who's known as an operator, and you assume that the two of them cannot sit down and have a conversation without something going on between them that sounds like a negotiation towards a deal.
Well, yeah, but the same thing, don't you think Joe Biden's people have been talking to the governor of Delaware prior to the appointment of Ted Kaufman, his best friend?
Yes, but we have no reason to think that money might have changed hands in that negotiation, whereas we clearly know that Rod Blagojevich was looking for some kind of payoff in respect to this appointment. So anybody he talked to about it automatically becomes at least suspect, if not tainted.
Speaking of the cabinet, one of the outgrowths of a cabinet appointment is Ken Salazar, the senator from Colorado, named as Secretary of something.
Interior.
Right, and Secretary of Interior. And that means an open Senate seat in the state of Colorado.
Yes, it does.
How much would you pay for a Senate seat in Colorado?
All I can say is that Governor Bill Ritter, another Democrat out there in Colorado, is going to have all of his conversations about filling this seat very carefully.
I also heard that with the calculation to replace Ken Salazar in Colorado, people are saying, well, whoever it's going to be, it's going to be John Hickenlooper, the mayor of Denver. It's going to be Federico Pena, the former drink. He was named after that drink.
The Pena Colada.
Thank you very much. Congressman Ed Perlmutter. But the thing is,
also a drink.
I'll have a Perlmutter, please, on the side. But what I thought was interesting is that every conversation is how much money can they raise for 2010? That was part of the calculation in Illinois. That's part of the calculation in Colorado.
Not how much money they can raise for Bill Ritter, but how much money they could run for re-election because it's going to come up very quickly and they're going to have to do it.
And that's one of the major topics of conversation in the calculation of whether to appoint Caroline Kennedy in New York. The amount of money she'll have to raise to run in 2010 and, of course, run again in 2012.
Can we review the bidding? Last week, you said you didn't think that Governor David Patterson would nominate Caroline Kennedy. You thought it would be somebody named Gillibrand from off in the woods someplace. And I said, no, I thought the pressure was going to be too great on the governor not to name a Kennedy when there's a Kennedy available.
But it's very interesting to see the backlash against Caroline Kennedy's name. This week, by the way, she's up in Utica and Syracuse and Buffalo and places
you've never been
in north of the Bronx, which I've never heard of. No, but I mean, that's, of course, that's what Hillary Clinton did in 1999 when she did her listening tour for the Senate. Caroline Kennedy is a New Yorker. I mean, she's lived there her whole adult life. It's not like...
Hillary Clinton.
Bobby Kennedy.
Jim Buckley.
People who have moved to New York just for this point of running for the Senate.
Not Caroline Kennedy.
No.
No, she moved there for the point of having a life in New York.
and a private life, and a private life until now. I mean, of course, she was on Barack Obama's vice presidential vetting committee.
Yes, and she also very publicly endorsed him in January. Obama back in January, when it mattered, when it could do him some good.
When Hillary Clinton
weighed in, when Hillary Clinton needed her to stay out,
right.
she and her uncle Ted. Yes, and the Clintons, of course, have not forgiven her.
Well, except what I've read lately is that Hillary is telling her supporters to tamp down that criticism. They said there are a lot of Hillary supporters who don't like the thought of Caroline Kennedy, that traitor, getting a Senate seat appointment. But there are some reports that Hillary has been calling those people saying, look, enough, enough already. It may very well be Caroline Kennedy. Just, you know, keep your criticism to yourself.
And if that does quiet down, then I suspect she will be the nominee. Look, we know for one thing for sure. That is, she can raise the money to run again in 2010.
Right.
She can raise the money to run yet again in 2012, as she has to do.
As the full term would start. And the last Democratic senator from New York to be defeated? Never.
No, no, wait a minute. Oh, the last Democratic
Never.
Senator.
Oh, okay. A Democratic
the
senator.
The last Democratic sitting senator to actually lose a re-election bid.
Never happened. No.
Here's something that happened this week that I thought was wonderful. When Tom Vilsack was named to be the new agriculture secretary, of course, he's the former governor of Iowa.
Two-term.
And when he was asked whom he favored a year ago in the Iowa caucuses, he came down very foursquare for Hillary Clinton. So it's a bit of a surprise to see him suddenly out there in the United States cabinet with Barack Obama, who again is demonstrating what would appear to be something of a capacity to forgive.
Well, first of all, I've read some speculation that it helps ward off a challenge in the Iowa caucuses in 2012.
Yes, you have read some of that speculation, that he is already thinking ahead to a firewall in Iowa in 2012.
I don't buy it for a second. I think Tom Vilsack is a great story. He was a great governor, a very popular governor, who is the kind of person who you need as agriculture secretary. Someone from Iowa, understands corn.
He's not a farmer. He's a lawyer and was an astonishing upset winner when he won his first term
against?
As governor in 1998 against Jim Ross Lightfoot.
Oh, man. How do you know that stuff?
Still waiting for a result in Minnesota, aren't we?
In Minnesota, the recount continues. The election between Republican incumbent Norm Coleman and Democratic challenger Al Franken continues. This week, it went to the five-member canvassing board. At least 1,500 ballots disputed by the two camps. Absentee ballots will be... You're yawning? This is exciting stuff. This could determine whether the Democrats have 58 or the magic 59 seats.
Well, exactly. Okay, so on a sad note, this week we have to note the passing of Paul Weyrich. Paul Weyrich, 66. He had founded the Free Congress Foundation. He had been a co-founder of the Heritage Foundation, an anchor to windward for conservatives in Washington for more than 30 years, and also well known, though, for what he did to one other fellow conservative back in 1989, John Tower.
He was the one, not the liberal Democratic Congress, but in 1989, it was Paul Weyrich who brought objections to John Tower, the former senator from Texas, who was the first President Bush's choice for Secretary of Defense. Paul Weyrich objected to John Tower on...
Called him a womanizer and a drunkard.
Which, sadly,
but he did it in public. He did it in front of the Senate Armed Services Committee on television, and it was a shocker.
It was the first cabinet nominee of a first-term president to be rejected in the history of cabinet appointments, and basically it started with the objection of Paul Weyrich.
That's right, and it set off a chain of events, which included the elevation of Dick Cheney to become Secretary of
Defense.
Dick
Cheney, who was the number two Republican in the House, when Tower's nomination went down, the first President Bush picked Dick Cheney as his Secretary of Defense. Cheney was... Had he stayed
on his way
in the
to
House,
being the first
speaker,
Republican speaker.
Probably
absolutely.
Could have been.
And that would have been the capper on his career. And he was replaced in that job by Newt Gingrich.
Who now, led the Republicans out of 40 years of wilderness in 1994.
That's right. When Bob Michael eventually retired. And that's how we got Newt Gingrich. One other thing that happened as a consequence, largely as a consequence, was that Republicans demanded kind of an eye for an eye. And another controversy that was going on roughly the same time led to the fall of Jim Wright, another Texan who had been Speaker of the House.
And prior to the Tower thing, there was Robert Bork. I think everybody likes to point to the previous thing, why we're getting back at you, why we're getting even with you because of what you did to us last time.
Tit for tat.
I don't know if you can say that on the air, but...
That's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics. From NPR.
Ken! I missed again.
Baby, it won't be long till I be tying on my flying shoes. Flying shoes. Till I be tying on my my flying shoes.
Who throws a shoe? Honestly.